There's this fancy new business theory. It's called make more than you spend and your king cunt.
Dad, come on.
Why shouldn't we do all the news?
Why shouldn't we do all the news?
Well, Kim Jong-pop, because that's not how things work in this country.
You just love telling people what to think, don't you?
Fuck off.
I just wanted to get the gang together early in my tenure to say, yo.
Here's a toast to me.
I'm Shiv fucking Roy.
I land the deal, I kill Kendall, I'm crowned the king. Just like in Hamlet. If that happens in Hamlet, I don't care.
Roman, you're a moron.
Did you ever think I could do it?
The top job.
I think you should drop both these two and I'll do it solo.
Wow, someone thinks they're Beyonce.
Logan, have you thought about the possibility that your children are actually scared of you?
Oh, fuck off.
You're not good enough for me.
Oh.
Hey, nice vest, Wamsgans. It's so puffy.
Thank you, Roman.
Was it stuffed with your hopes and dreams?
Yes, you are family, and he does treat family differently.
Yeah. No, sure. Although, yeah. He did once call me the cunt of Monte Cristo.
I can't reveal my sources. But it's Greg.
I got a haircut. Even though I didn't really need a haircut, I think I just wanted someone to touch my head.
You got a haircut?
Yeah.
I hate it.
I say L, you say O, G, L to the
M. Oh, for fuck's sake, Dad, just tell him it's gonna be me.
Stop buzzing in my fucking ear!
Are you kidding about the presidential thing?
No, I'm still applying for the job of president of the United States.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, do you think that that's like a natural progression from never done nothing, never to most important job in the world?
No,
Kendall is going to call for a vote of no confidence against his own father.
The truth is that my father is a malignant presence, a bully, and a liar.
Are you going to fucking cry?
Broken robot, can't even hug your own kids.
I am surrounded by snakes and fucking morons!
You're a fucking bitch.
You're a fucking twat.
A spoiled slut.
Four on the floor!
Get down!
Greg, on the floorboard!
Money wins. You are a fucking nobody.
I have you beat!
And you're so fucking jealous, aren't you? You're so fucking jealous of what you've given your own kids.
What have you had your entire life that I didn't give you?
Dad didn't need me right now. I don't exactly know what I would be for. I deserve it. Maybe I deserve it.
Right, so tonight on the podcast, we are talking about Succession.
Yeah.
And I just marvel at how good this show is, Dave.
I've got two words to say to you, Lee. Fuck off.
Yeah. But it really is amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's one of the best TV shows I think ever made.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd say it's my favourite ever American TV show.
Me too. Totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I've been saying
that. I mean, it's surpassed a couple of good ones in The Sopranos and
Breaking Bad. Yeah, me too. As much as I love them, it's better. It's the nuance, the subtlety, the dialogue, of course, the characterization. It's just so, it's so incredibly watchable, and you don't even like anybody. This is the thing.
Well, that is what I was thinking tonight. Is there ever a show? I think this is a fairly modern thing, isn't it? That you didn't used to get shows like this at all. There was always somebody that you were made to root for and made to empathize with.
Yeah.
But this just takes it to a new level. It just goes the opposite way. Yeah, so there's not many shows where none of the characters are likable.
No.
Or none of the main characters. Initially, I thought Greg was like the moral compass of the show, you know, in the first season maybe. But then he slowly turned evil, didn't he?
He's possibly the number one creep. So the transformation into the most groveling, snotty, pole-climbing creep is there for all to see. He's been sucked into the Roy way of life, you know.
Yeah.
And there's some serious sycophancy going on throughout all the series, really. Especially Greg to Logan, Roman to Logan, you know, K Kendall after the accident to Logan. There's all this sycophancy coming Logan's way. And he doesn't buy any of it. This
no.
He never
no, he hates it. He cringes.
He hates it.
When did you start watching it, Dave? Did you start from the first season or did you catch up two or three seasons in?
We started watching it last year. And so I think that all three seasons had already taken place.
What made you watch it? Was it a recommendation?
Well, it was my wife. Yeah, it was Jackie. She just said, Dave, I really want to watch this show. I've heard loads of things about it. I had no idea. I don't really keep abreast of a lot of the shows that come out until I hear about them through other people, because I'm not as well versed as quite a lot of other people with the things that come out, you know.
So I don't think I've watched anything. Things, if I think about what I've watched American wise, Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, you know, I came at them quite late.
Yeah, but we did too. And we sort of jumped on the old wagon of all of them. And something, for example, like Walking Dead, I really liked The Walking Dead for the first few series. And then,
I think that's the same for everybody who ever watched The Walking Dead.
It was like pulling teeth on it in the end. It was like, fuck off now. You know, enough. Going around in circles here. Fuck off. And then Breaking Bad seemed perfect because it was the 5 series and that was it. And in a way, before Succession came along, I would have said Breaking Bad was a nigh-on kind of perfect series. But what I think is I love about Succession over, say, Breaking Bad is that there's always got to be a big plot twist all the time in Breaking Bad. There's always, it's all plot driven. It's so plot driven. Whereas, although the plot is quite distinct actually in Succession, you're not really watching it for the plot. The plot kind of develops around the characterization. You're really interested about the characters. That's it. You're totally involved with the characters and with who they are. And I think in that first series in particular, I mean, Kendall, Jeremy Strong's acting, it's amazing performance, I think, because he's such a desperately lost human being in so many ways. And into the second series to some degree. Well, I'd say him and Brian Cox, of course. I mean, it's a bloody powerhouse performance by Brian Cox, isn't it? You kind of expect that, Brian Cox, don't you?
Yeah, you're right what you say about you don't really watch it to see what particularly happens plot-wise. And I think it was set up as a bit of a... There was just one storyline, wasn't it? Who's going to take over from Logan?
Yeah, that's it.
They've managed to keep that going for four series. So that is the crux of the idea, isn't it? Who's going to succeed?
Yeah, and it's the crux of it is such a simple idea, is who is going to be the one. It's basically King Lear as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
The story is King Lear. It's like, which one of my daughters will succeed me? Who should I choose? And the umming and ahhing over that. In the case of Succession, it's the two sons and the daughter. Because the other son is such a fuck up. There's no way he's going to be in line.
I really hated Connor towards the end. He seemed like a fairly harmless, sympathetic character.
It's the Fredo.
He's a bit of an outsider because he's not got the same mum. But he just became a narcissistic prick, didn't he? And, you know, the way he just asked his dad for, like, oh, just can you just lend me a little 100 mil for his vanity project? You know, money just means nothing to him, does he? He's just used it to get everything he wants, including his wife.
Well, that's the other thing as well. Money means nothing really to any of them. It's all about it's all about them having some kind of prestige in their life to make them feel of value. And that's really what I think the story's about, is what they value. And what they really value is the love of their father, which they are never really going to get.
I think we should start maybe with Brian Cox and the character of Logan Roy and try and figure him out, because what is he really like? You know, do you think he's just a bad father? Do you think he is deliberately cruel to his kids? You know, because he withholds his love, he withholds his approval. And first you might think, is it tough love? You know, because they've got to step up to the plate, and this is how how he grew up. You know, he never got any breaks, and all his kids have been born at the finish line, haven't they? I think that's a big part of Succession.
Brilliantly put.
Is he a bit of a sociopath in that he just wants to be cruel to his kids?
I think I this is the great mystery, because I think that there's some truth in all of that. I think there is some sociopathic, psychopathic tendency in there. He can't really express his emotions properly, can he? But partly he's been abused. So there's great hints where, you know, I discussed the swimming pool incident, didn't I? We were discussing that the other week, and where he comes out of the swimming pool and he's got the lesions on his back, and the kids think that he can't swim, right? Where he seems to be swimming perfectly well, gets out of the water and he's got these marks on his back. And you know that he stayed with his uncle in Canada, and that him and Ewan were extradited out of Dundee, Scotland during the war to go and stay with their uncle. But he was very, very tough with them, very, very hard with them. So he's basically he was abusive. He was abusive to Logan, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then when you get to the final series, and then Ewan talks about how they had a sister and she got polio and died. And
He brought it back, apparently.
He brought it back. Logan had polio, recovered fully from it. She died, didn't she?
Yeah. And
or did he get it? He brought it back. I don't know how it quite
worked. Ewan says, you know, although his uncle didn't say to Logan that it's your fault, they never disabused him of that idea.
No.
By not saying it isn't your fault, they're saying it is your fault. And he had to live with that. And obviously that really toughened him up. And that could be one explanation. But I think one of the running themes through Succession is how just disappointed he is in his kids.
Hugely.
You can completely understand why, but he must realise that he has created that.
He's made it.
He's created them because they have been born into wealth. They've never wanted for anything.
Yeah.
And he gives them opportunities to step up to the plate, and they just don't get there, do they? Kendall completely fucks up. I think one of the greatest scenes, I mean, I think it's the first episode, isn't it, where he's trying to buy Volta.
Yes.
Is it a BuzzFeed type internet website? You know, Logan says, okay, you want to prove yourself, go and buy Volta. And he gets into a right mess, doesn't he?
Yeah. It.
And the guy, Lawrence Yee, pulls out the deal because he doesn't want to sell to them. He doesn't agree with their ethics. Then Kendall, in desperation, has to up the bid, and he ends up offering Lawrence a seat on the board, doesn't he, to get the deal through. Just so he can say to his dad, I did it.
Yeah.
But his dad sees this, and there's a great scene where he says something about, is that why you're paying $1 billion for this gay website?
Yeah.
You know, so he's just saying to him, you're overpaying, you've fucked up the deal, even though you've got it over the line, it doesn't mean anything, you've failed.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And, you know, the one character I always thought was very competent was Shiv. You know, in the early seasons, I thought actually Shiv should be the one that takes over.
Yeah,
and there was a storyline where he had picked her.
That's right.
I can't remember off the top of my head why.
Yeah, we've just been rewatching that. It comes about because in the end, he just feels like she shoots her mouth off too much, which is a kind of irony with him. Because, you know, but he thinks that she's inappropriate, you know.
Right.
She does it but the reality is, I think there's some truth in everything he says. But the reality is, he just doesn't want to let go of the ball. He just wants to be in control all the time. He's a control freak, and he doesn't want to let go.
Yeah.
And Brian Cox will defend him in interviews. I've seen quite a lot of interviews. He'll go, oh, no, he just thinks all his kids are fuck-ups, and he just wants to pass it on to someone who knows what they're doing. But I think he's been a little bit disingenuous there, because I think the reality is, you can sort of read it in between the lines in the writing. He doesn't want to let go of power. He doesn't want to let go. He doesn't want to relinquish power.
Well, what would he have if he did?
Exactly. Yeah. He's an 80-odd-year-old man who was sat there looking at his war medals that he didn't win himself. you know, and watching TV and shouting at the TV screen. That's about it. You know, he wouldn't have anything. He wants to be sat in that office, effing and jeffing and telling people what to do. That's his life.
You can't blame him for that. It does seem quite an enjoyable role to have.
Well, yeah.
He is really impressive, though, as a businessman, isn't it? He always wins. You know, there's so many times when the kids try to get the better of him, and he's just one step ahead of them all the time.
Well, and what's interesting is when he doesn't win Pierce, you know, he's so furious.
Yes, that's
he's
right.
He's chasing the car. He's banging on the window to Nan. Why? You know, because he's so used to winning. And she's turned around and said, oh, no, can't be doing with you lot. Because it's one thing he can't get his hands on, because it's family run. It's still a family run business. Mm-hmm. It's not like he can wheedle his way with stocks and shares to get it. He can't do it that way. He can't finagle his way into the company to own it. And it's
different
basically
set of rules, isn't it?
Different set of rules. She's saying, you're inappropriate for us as a company. We don't believe in what you believe in, you know, and I've had enough of it. Forget the money. Forget it. Because he was offering a very massive deal, really, to sell the company. And she was close to doing it. And then she changed her mind. You know, and he couldn't stand that. Because that's the one thing Logan Roy does not want to do. He doesn't want to lose. He never, ever wants to lose. And, of course, when Kendall does what he does, betrays him, he certainly doesn't want to lose to Kendall. You know, now.
No, but you know what? It's funny that, Dave, because I think that was the one time when he was watching that press conference when Kendall did throw him under the bus and betray him.
Yeah.
I think that was the one time he was actually impressed with Kendall. Yeah, yes. Because a little smirk comes over his face, doesn't it? And he's like, I'm quite proud of you this time, son.
Yeah.
And he probably relished the fight.
Yeah.
But he played it brilliantly. He knew what to do. He knew who to get on side, how to play it. And, you know, that is one of the best storylines in the series, when Kendall tries to take over and get people on his side, but you just see it slowly falling apart, because he tries to reinvent himself, doesn't he? He becomes all woke and he's like staying stuff on Twitter and saying fuck the patriarchy, you know, and he has that big birthday party which goes to shit. And then he's trying to get Tom, isn't he? He's trying to get Tom. He sees Tom as quite a key player, if he can get Tom on his side. But Tom backs out and he says something really memorable, like, you know, I don't mean to insult you, but I've seen you get fucked a lot and I've never seen Logan get fucked once.
Exactly. And even when Logan's got the chips totally against him, when Kendall has got the backing of other people, other major shareholders, to take it away from Logan, when Logan's really cornered, as a twist of fate that actually puts it right back in Logan's hands. When Kendall goes off with the lad to get the drugs, the car goes in the water.
That's right. That's what does it, isn't it?
And that's a total twist of fate. So that was the second time, you know, really, where Kendall has tried to screw the old man, thinking, well, he's... And to be fair, rightly too, he is partly thinking, he's pissing on the floor of the office, he's been irrational, you know, he's had a massively serious brain hemorrhage. He should not be running this company, you know. And all the acolytes that are around Logan, who are talking to Kendall in exactly the same way, when push comes to the shove, in the presence of Logan, shit themselves.
Yeah.
And are not prepared to just tell him straight. You know, the one who comes closest very often is Frank.
Yeah.
Frank is perhaps the only one with a little bit of backbone. Not the others. They are sledgehammer. Chicken shit in front of him.
I love Sledgehammer.
And it's great because he is the slimiest of them all. He has got a backbone as brittle as glass.
Yeah, but do you not think he shows a bit of backbone in towards the end of the
towards
the series, when is it Kendall he says something to, like, you know, this is going to cost you millions, or don't play me. Oh no, it's Jerry who says it's going to cost you millions.
Yeah.
I think Carl says something to Kendall like, you know, you can't play me, you know, I'm going to play you, you know, I've got so much dirt on this company and you, and you're going to have to make sure I'm all right.
Yeah, but that's because it's Kendall.
Yeah.
Not with Logan.
Like you said, some of them, they've got no backbone and they don't appear that formidable or impressive, but they've got that experience. They know how the game is played.
They know how to play the game, exactly. Mm. They just view it as a game. And who can blame them? Because they don't really give a shit about this family. They think they're all a bunch of tosspots.
Yeah,
they're out for themselves. They're out to keep this huge nest egg that they've been building up as part of this big corporation. And they're very, very highly paid yeses, aren't they? Yes, sir, I'll do this. Yes, sir, I'll do that. That's what they are. And they know how to play the game, like you say. But when it comes to push comes to shove, even though they're agreeing with Kendall, you're right, he's not right, he can't run this company, he's mentally unsound. No. Push comes to shove, they will back Logan in the end, if it's face-to-face with Logan. They don't want him in the room. What about that bit in the first series, when he refuses to leave?
Yeah.
When they're going to make the vote of no confidence. And Frank even says it, this is illegal, you can't be in it. What are you doing? Yeah. But he just won't leave. And therefore, shitty little Roman will not fucking vote.
And that's it, because he is so scary, isn't he?
He's a bully.
To his kids, yeah. They are shit scared of him.
He bullies everybody. Mm. He bullies everybody in the office. All those around him, but especially his kids, and he's incredibly manipulative in that respect.
Like I said, going back to Shiv a bit, she's the one that he's more likely to stand up to him.
Yeah.
Isn't she? And she sees his weak spot. Maybe it's because she is his only daughter.
Yeah.
She's a lot smarter than Kendall and Roman.
Yeah.
Those other flaws start to appear, you know, as the series go on.
Yeah.
And the way she gets played in the end beautifully by Mattson, doesn't she?
Mattson's
going to install her.
Yeah. Well, Mattson, in his own different way, he does a Logan on them all. He does a fucking Logan. And it makes you think, if Logan was alive, if Logan lived, would he not have done the same thing? I think he probably would have installed Tom. Especially knowing that she was going to give birth to the grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, okay, this will do. We'll have Tom. Because I think he trusted Tom more, certainly as a skivvy and a yezzer, and, you know, say the right things, do the right things, and be prepared to be quite selfishly merciless.
Well, interestingly, you know, I mean, I'm not saying everyone, but I think you could view the installation as Tom. I mean, he was essentially put there by Mattson as to be a puppet.
Yes.
Okay. But I heard, I think of all people, Ben Shapiro talking about Tom and Succession.
Right.
And he did make a very good point in the fact that Tom is actually competent. If you look at when Tom is offered the job, he keeps the right people. So he keeps Jerry, he keeps Carolina, he gets rid of Carl and Frank and the other PR guy. Is it Hugo, that little slimy tanned git?
Number Jerry 5. He was in that short circuit.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So he installs, assembles the right team around him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think he got enough credit, really. I think Tom can play the corporate game.
Yeah.
He can turn on the charm. His ruthless streak is a bit sort of fake, is that he'll hide behind Greg, won't he, a bit?
Oh, yeah.
Seeing those sackings. So he is obviously massively flawed as a leader, but he's just one of these people.
That's perfect for Ben Shapiro, mate.
He's just typical. You know, you get these people, don't you, that you think are shit at the job, but they seem to rise to the top because they know how to say the right things, and that they're quite happy to be sycophantic to the boss and kiss their arse.
Absolutely.
And that's what he says, isn't it? He says, when Mattson's sounding him out, saying what you like, and he basically, I can't remember the wording he uses, but he says, I can absorb the pain and I'm malleable. I can be basically anything you want me to be. That's what he's trying to do anyway, isn't he? When he's trying to get close to Mattson at parties and things and trying to press on him. And he's quite shameless.
Shameless. I love as well is I love it because Carl, you know, you're talking about Carl growing a pair. Yeah. And he turns to Tom, doesn't he, in the final series, and he says, you're fucking nothing. You know, he's really rude to him. Yeah. And when I think Gar knows immediately when Tom has been made the CEO, it's like, Carl's like, that's it, I'm done yeah. now. Because yeah. I picked the wrong horse. I basically said, you can fuck off. Who the fuck are you? And he becomes the top man, you know. There was a lot of talk in the media that maybe it was going to be Greg, which I kind of thought was going to be a bridge too, way too far.
That would have been a brand moment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But in a way, it's the perfect ending. And I think that's kind of why it's such the perfect series, because it is the perfect ending that Tom, who's come not from money, but has clambered his way up. He's the kind of modern day Logan. He's the guy who has got into the company, and okay, he's married the boss's daughter, but he's basically slimed his way to the top. He's a self-made man through climbing the greasy pole.
Yeah, well, I think Logan in a way respects that more than he can respect what his kids have done. Again, apart from Shiv, I mean, Shiv had a different career, didn't she?
Yeah, but he sees Tom as a much more serious operator who really cares, who really gives a shit. And that election night episode proves that, because he's absolutely fucking wired to fuck. He's wired to fuck and pissed, and he's really wanting to get it right. And he's fucking pissed off that he's got to do that job. And the night before he does that job, he's got everybody in his house having some big fucking party going on. But all he wants to do, because he can't sleep because he's so concerned about the job in hand, and all he wants to do is go to bed.
I love ends up that.
Having this massive argument with Shiv, and you know, but really the reality is he just wants to fucking go to bed. He's knackered. Yeah. He's not been able to sleep.
I love that bit where he's telling, right, I'm going to bed now. No, you're going to have to leave. No, I'm serious.
No one's listening to him.
Fuck off.
It's like the worm has turned. I kind of love that, because, you know, the fact that Tom's got okay, he's not got ultimate power because he's got Madsen. But Madsen said, I don't really give a shit, leave it to you. You know, I just want you to be my yes man. Internally, he'll have a lot of control.
Yes, you know? I think he does play. I mean, it is important to know where you are in the pecking order sometimes.
Yeah.
You can still have a successful career and get where you want to be if you know that. Whereas the others are they're so egocentric. You know, Kendall thinks he's some brilliant business guy. He's just terrible. The same with Roman, you know. And I love that bit at the end where Roman says, we're just a joke. Finally sees how
brilliant.
Would view them. You know, they've never done anything.
That is brilliant.
Just been born into this.
Yeah.
But Tom is, you know, he doesn't particularly like it. He's probably lost a lot of self-respect. But he's thinking, well, okay, I'm trading my self-respect, but I get the CEO job, or I'm going to be head of ATN or whatever it is. He always seems to be given decent jobs, doesn't he?
Yeah, he goes from, what is it, the head of parks.
Yeah.
Then he's the head of ATN.
Then he gets the cruises, which was a poison chalice.
Then he gets the cruises and nearly goes to prison.
I love that bit where the guy is handed over. Oh, you just need to know this. I'm just going to write it down. I'm just going to type it out. I'm not going to say it.
No problem. As long as it stays here, nothing will come of it. It's so funny, that scene. This is the other thing about the series. This is the thing that a second watch really promotes, is just how incredibly funny it is. Because you watch it the first time, you can miss a lot of nuance in there, a lot of funny things in it. And there's always incredible lines, you know, that come out.
Oh, it's beyond, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean,
human.
That is, funnily enough, that's what I used to think of Peep Show, you know.
Indeed.
And of course, Jesse Armstrong was the co-writer of Peep Show. Oh, yeah. And I was amazed when I found out that Succession was written by him.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I thought, how's he gone from Peep Show, which is one of the best shows ever, in my opinion, massive HBO series? I mean, that is massively impressive.
You know, it's quite remarkable that he's possibly done, I think he's done the greatest, I'd still call Succession a drama series. I think he's done the greatest American drama series ever. For me, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest satirical British comedy series ever. Maybe the greatest. I mean, I'd argue, because how much I love League of Gentlemen, and how much I love Partridge and all that.
But, yeah.
But it's so tantalizing to say Peep Show. Peep Show is a kind of a reality, almost like a reality comedy show, because there's so much in there as a sort of sitcom.
And like I say, that there's so many memorable, quotable lines. It's one of the most quotable shows. And similarly, I think, is that people used to say that Jeremy and Mark were just horrible people. You could compare that to the people in Succession who are just horrible people. I never felt Mark was a horrible person. I always had empathy for Mark.
Yeah, me too.
He was just always shafted, and he was.
Well, in a way, Mark. What is fantastic is you could equate Mark's character to some degree to Matthew McFadden's character.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
David Mitchell's character to Matthew McFadden's character. There's something quite similar about Mark and about Tom. There's a naivety at times. There's a kind of traditionalism. There's a kind of also, but a huge pettiness and huge.
Well, I
vanity.
Think Mark did do. Mark did do some shitty things.
Oh, yes.
But I mean, and the fact that he never really bothered with his son, Ian, was probably quite telling. But you know, I used to hear this. A lot of people say, "Oh, they're just horrible people." And I thought, "No, hang on. Jeremy's horrible and selfish, and so's Sophie and Superhands and Johnson, to a certain extent."
Yeah, they're all horrible.
But Mark isn't. Mark's the one. He's just quite pathetic. But
yeah,
in a very British way.
Do you know we're onto something here? Because I do think that Tom's kind of the pathetic one. Tom is the one who worries. And he's the real greasy pole climber, which is what Mark's trying to be all the time in Peep Show, and not succeeding. And he's very much the kind of underdog.
And but ends up in a loveless marriage, just like Mark did.
Yes, exactly.
It's Sophie.
Oh, it's Sophie. Yeah. But the thing is, what he's done is just escalate the character with Tom. It's just great.
Well, I think it might be time to say that Tom is my favourite character.
I was going to, I personally think this. In the first two series, I think it's real close call between Kendall and Logan.
It's
the favourite characters. But as the series goes on, and lots of people, I know this is nothing original, lots of people feel this, because there's lots of stuff on YouTube about it as well. Tom does elevate into this. You know, and you have, in a way, like Kendall, you have a lot more empathy for Tom, even though you know he's a shit. So it's like the same with Kendall. Kendall is someone who you feel desperate for because he's a desperately lost soul, but at the same time, he's such an egotistical prick and spoiled daddy's boy in many ways, and all these other things. But then in a heartbeat, you can change and go, oh, God, I feel so bad for him because he's so desperately lost. And he's like a little boy. Sometimes he's like a little boy.
He never wins. He's like Cliff Barnes.
Yes, exactly. He's like Cliff Barnes. He never wins. That's a great analogy. He's like Cliff Barnes. And with Tom, what you think with Tom is, he has these like little successes, and then he's on a real downer again because he's been thrown into confusion with his wife going on about open marriage and all this, which he doesn't want, but he doesn't know how to tell her that until he grows. What you kind of like is Tom sort of really grows a pair at times, and he sort of says how it is, but he also can go for, you can be really empathetic with him and really on his side, and then think, you horrible, nasty shit, treating Greg like that, you know, really being a bully to Greg. And it's brilliant. It's brilliantly done. It's brilliant. But it's mainly brilliant writing.
Yeah.
These are all of them top draw, supersonically talented actors. I've thought Matthew McFadden in it is a great actor for years. He's been doing so many. Oh, yeah.
I never really saw him in anything. He was in Spooks, wasn't he? And Pride and Prejudice. I saw Pride and Prejudice, but I never watched Spooks.
I started noticing when I realised guy's a kind of hidden, he's a really good character actor, because he was in Frost Nixon playing a friend of David Frost's in.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, he's a good character actor. You know, he's playing a secondary role, but he's good at it. And then he was in that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire episode where he played the Colonel.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And I thought, yeah, he's playing interesting roles, this guy. He's not just trying to be the posh leading man. He's doing a lot of different...
How he got the role of Tom, you know, because obviously he's playing an American.
I just think it's that for Matt, he's doing, he was doing like different things. And you know what? With that Frost Nixon, that was quite a big sort of Hollywood film, wasn't it? And also the Millionaire thing was done by Stephen Frears. Because Stephen Frears is quite a big filmmaker name, isn't he?
So sure, yeah.
So he was doing the rounds a bit. He was putting himself about. And but obviously this is the biggest thing he's ever done. I think he's going to go on to be... He's going to get big film roles or anything. Or he's going to get all sorts now. His career. Quite rightly, too. I think he's a brilliant actor. I really rate him. He's not... When I first saw him on telly, I just thought, oh, he's just another sort of tough actor. He's not, you know what I mean? But he's much more than that. He's a really talented actor. I just think everybody they've chosen for the different roles are just perfect.
I know. Everybody. It's very interesting. I mean, I've not really delved into how they cast the actors. I know Kendall was in The Big Short, wasn't he? Which Big Short is a great film, but he has quite a small part in it. But I remember hearing that because he was so impressive in that, they wanted him in this. And I think
he had a big reputation in the theatre. He was really developing a big reputation as a method.
Because he's very method, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very method, yeah.
Yeah. Brian Cox talks about that in an interview where he says he respects it, but he found it a bit frustrating at times. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I think they're very fond of each other as people, and that, but I don't think they disagree with the way to do it. But Jeremy Strong, oh my God, the way he talks about Brian Cox, he loves him. You know, he's said to work with such a powerhouse, and their scenes together are just, some of their scenes are just incredible.
It is very much like Kendall just becomes a boy, doesn't he? He becomes that scared little 10-year-old.
And it's amazing, that scene, isn't it? You know, when the father, when Logan, not only does he realise he's got this big get-out clause now with this, he knows he's going to be able to hold fort with the business. He knows that Royko Waystar is still going to be his when he realises that Kendall's been involved in this tragic accident.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And he just manipulates it so perfectly in his favour.
Well, he hugs him, doesn't he, and calls him his favourite, I think.
And he calls him his favourite. And there's this, just this moment of affection when he hugs him. And Kendall says, like a little boy, he's like a sad little boy, having had this terrible traumatic thing happen. And he hugs him and he gives him a little kiss on his forehead. Mm-hmm. But then he sees Colin and he just waves Colin over. And it's just perfect. It's just like, that's enough affection. That's as much affection as I can offer as a father.
All the affection that I've given him has worked. It's done what I needed it to do.
The amount of ways you can interpret that scene is incredible. Mm-hmm. Because you can think, is it the sole amount of affection that Logan can ever offer anybody?
I don't think it's genuine. I think it's another totally fake manipulation there.
It could be totally fake. I think it's a bit of both, personally. Mm. I think that there is genuine.
I think he's got him by the balls, hasn't he, already?
Yeah.
But this is just like the cherry on the cake, because he's making it sound like it's coming from a place of love. You know, I'm going to look after you.
Yeah.
He's not even saying, I've got you by the balls. You're going to have to do what I want now. You're going to have to drop this.
But he knows that what's interesting, as then the series progresses into the second series and Kendall's his right-hand man and he's just doing everything his dad wants him to do, Logan is, and this is where there is this kind of affection, this love, however you want to perceive it, because he struggles to show it, let's be honest, where he's sending like Greg to just keep an eye on Kendall. What he does not want is Kendall to kill himself or overdose. And Jackie knows the most really fantastic bit of nuance. He often is, you see him going to the top of the building, right to the top of the building, looking out over the city from the top of the building. And then all of a sudden, you see this perspex wall, you know, the perspex has been put up.
That's right.
And it's like, oh my God, yeah. Because don't want Kendall killing himself, because he knows, he doesn't know how to express, son, I'm really worried, you need help.
Do you really think that's genuine, though? Because I would say that he's thinking about the share price.
I might be. You see,
I'm not saying he doesn't love him. You know, you can love your child and hate them at the same time.
Yeah.
I think he finds Kendall so utterly pathetic and embarrassing. And he does what he can to steer him in the right direction. He gives him opportunities, but he's constantly disappointed by him.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. He's very disappointed.
I think he is torn in the fact that he may have at one point promised him that he could take over. And he is giving him every chance to prove himself. But Kendall just can't do it. He's incompetent. He's indecisive.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's so naive, isn't he? He can't see things from other angles. He can't cover all the bases. I mean, one of my favourite bits in it, we might go on to favourite bits if you've got a list, Dave.
Let's do it.
I mean, it's the first episode, I think, where Kendall's going to buy Volta.
Yeah.
He's going in dead confident. And Lawrence Yee, the head of Volta, says, well, there's an issue here. Pulls the rug right under Kendall and says, you know, he's quite professional in the meeting because there's lots of people in this meeting, and he says it's just not going to work for us. I think I can get more value for my shareholders elsewhere. And then when he's got a private moment with Kendall, he says, I'm not fucking selling to you Neanderthals. I'm not having you raping my company. Because
yeah.
he just hates the Roys, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
The complete antithesis of how he is and how his company is. He doesn't want to be taken over by this massive conglomerate. And Kendall just ends up so desperate, doesn't he? And he's begging him and raising the price of the offer.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't go anywhere. But you find out that he ends up offering Lawrence a seat on the board as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, which is a really cruel moment, actually, is he says, we've done the deal. But your dad's in hospital. He's had a brain hemorrhage. And Kendall doesn't know this because he's not with his dad at the time, is he?
No.
In the helicopter. And he's saying, and now daddy's not around. You've let the fox into the chicken coop.
Yeah.
And I'm going to eat you one by one.
Yeah.
You know, showing his true colours.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he just shows how naive Kendall was.
Hugely.
You know, he was played brilliant. But I love the Volta story. The Volta story, I mean, it pops up every so often.
Oh, yeah.
But one of my favourite moments was when Logan realizes, what if we bought here? This is shit. You know, he's tanking money. And he sends Kendall in to do like a bit of an audit, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, what it is as well is that the word on the grapevine is that the staff want to unionize. This is a key
part of it.
You know, so Logan's like, fuck that. I don't want that.
Kendall goes in there. He tries to do a bit of an audit. And he asks Lawrence for, like, all the records. And Lawrence overwhelms with all this paperwork. Whereas Roman, because Roman's been sent in there to do that, he just takes out two of the employees, gets some shit-faced, and finds out everything he needs to know, that the company's is failing, they want to unionise, like you said. Yeah. So he reports back, and there's that great scene where they're both feeding back to Logan. Kendall's saying, no, it's great, we should keep it, you know, it'll get better and better. Roman's like, no, shut it down, sell it off. And he goes with Roman, doesn't he? And I think what that shows, as well as Kendall again failing, is that Roman does sometimes have good instincts.
Yes.
Doesn't he? You know, he's terrible at most other things, but sometimes his instinct's right. And he's got this ability to cut through all the bullshit.
Yeah.
Cut to the chase. And his dad sides with him on that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that maybe coming, we'll come back in a bit to this idea of succession top trumps, but one of the categories that I would have is cunning, and Roman would probably get very high marks for cunning, you know, because he has got moments like his dad. He has got Machiavellian operational moments where, okay, I'll take them out, I can do something with them, I can find out some information.
Yeah, he and just of course, knew what to do, didn't he?
He knew what to do.
Going to be pouring over the accounts.
And he knew.
I know.
And he knew as well to side with the right-wing presidential candidate was going to help them get rid of Alexander Skarsgård's company.
That backfired in the end, unfortunately.
It did in the end. It did, but
it did look like that was a good move.
It did look very much like that was going to work for them. You know, that was really going to work. But of course, then Skarsgård does a schmooze on the fucking the horrible right wing Trumpite that's going to, you know. So, I mean, some of the underlying storylines are just brilliant. And they're woven in kind of subtly. They're not, it's not done in a very big, obvious way. The series is so good because what it does, it treats the viewer with intelligence. It says, look, we're going to put this out here. It's going to be fast talking. There's going to be lots and lots of business, subterfuge going on here. You figure it out. We're not going to be really explaining it. You figure it out through what's going on in the dialogue.
Yeah.
And that's what's brilliant about it. Because, like you say, Rowan comes back and says, oh, no, they're going to unionize, they're going to do this, that, the other, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, that's when Logan, again, the great manipulator, Logan says, no, Ken, you go now and you go and sack them all. You go and
well, that is one job. Of my, if we're talking top five moments, Dave, Kendall guts Volta.
Yes.
It is, and I loved it because I hated Longy, I hated Volta. And he goes in there, dead robotic. Yeah, you're all dismissed. You've got 15 minutes. And he puts in one of his own. I thought this was a very good line from Kendall when he says, you know, the only two verticals driving revenue are food and weed.
In reality, in life, though, this is the great thing is because what this is what Jesse Armstrong does that's so clever is that you do kind of think, oh, who's this cocky fucking Volta guy?
Yeah.
But you would rather work for Lawrence Yee in his company and be one of the slacker boys, you know, with the laptop, you know, in that company, than working for this dinosaur fucking corporation. The way that they bully the underlings in Royco and the way they treat it, I mean, it's awful. It's terrible. Mm. But you are still kind of swayed towards the main characters. You kind of want them to succeed. Well, you kind of want Kendall to get one over on Volta.
He got it over Longy brilliantly. Longy comes in, doesn't he? Go, what the fuck's going on, Kendall? What's happening? And he says, go find some other chicken coop, cunt.
Yeah. That's what he said.
And that was a beautiful bit of revenge.
Yeah.
But in the end, Lawrence Yee ends up coming back, doesn't he? Because he's still got the seat on the board.
Yeah, yeah.
He don't see him in the last few episodes, but he's mentioned quite a bit because he's one of the people that Mattson may be considering putting in charge as a puppet, figure.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, Yee would have voted against Kendall.
Yeah, for sure.
So
this is it.
It was like, yeah, Kendall thought he had the last laugh, but he didn't. He hasn't.
So, well, as we all know, I mean, this is the incredible sort of tragic ending of it, is that Kendall is the truly tragic figure of the whole series, isn't he? And that's what kind of makes it so poignantly brilliant.
Have you got any top five moments, Dave, that you can think of?
Oh, I've got so many, obviously the end of series one is amazing.
What happens there? Just remind me.
Well, with the car crash going in.
Oh, is that the last? Is that
Kendall gets up, goes back down to try and save the lad. He does actually attempt to save the lad. He does try.
Of course, yeah.
And
Roman wouldn't have done that, would he?
There's a moment there, though, I think he's so brilliant, at the top of my head, when he comes back to the party and he almost has this moment of realisation because all he's been doing is trying to get his fix for his drugs, trying to get his fix, and so desperate because he's in this horrible position where he knows he's going to shit on his dad, but he's ultimately going to get what he wants, which is to be the CEO of Royco Waystar. But he's got to do it by aligning himself with these fucking horrible, treacherous characters. So he's really torn. And Sandy and the other guy, what's his name? God, it's gone out of my head.
Stewie. Stewie's a brilliant character. He's
unashamedly the slimiest man in the world. Yeah, and unashamedly, Stewie is the slimiest man. Second only to Sandy, who... Brilliant, because with Sandy actually gets syphilis. And they're like, people actually get syphilis now? And one of the greatest lines ever comes from Matt. It's like, syphilis, it's kind of like MySpace. Tom goes, yeah. It's the MySpace of STDs.
That I forgot is about that line. That was amazing.
It's one of the funniest lines ever, isn't it? I mean, Jesus.
Who said that?
Tom. It's Tom who says it. God.
Again, Stewie can just wipe the floor with Kendall, can't he? He's so... He's just by far the better businessman, even though they're sort of mates, and I think they went to the same...
They were college mates. Can you imagine?
College, yeah.
What a fucking horrible, slimy pair of bastards they must have been at college, you know. But it's a great moment that I love is when they come, when Kendall, he manages to come home, he gets home, he showers, he cleans himself up, and then he rejoins the party, Shiv's wedding party, after the wedding. And he sees his estranged wife and his kids. And he has this, it's like in his face, it's a great bit of acting. He has this sort of epiphany moment. It's like, my God, this is what it should really be about. This, my family. This is what it should be about. It's a brilliantly done moment, that. And he's like dancing with them, and he's actually having a really nice time with his family, having just basically been in this car accident where someone's died, and he's had this epiphany, and then he just wakes up the next day in this horror, because it just all comes back to him in this, you know, that horrible thing when you first wake up and something bad's happened, you don't realise it, and then it kicks in. Oh, horrible. Yeah. It is one of the great moments, that, I think.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
A funny line, can I just say very quickly, funny line. The scene where they go to the house and it's like on Cape Cod, it's out there. They're all together as a family. They go there together as a family and it stinks. And they're all going out, what's the smell? God, it smells. Why does it smell so bad in this house? Blah, blah, blah. And then Logan arrives. Logan's the last to arrive. Every single member of them have said how the house stinks. And Logan, I don't know if this is a direct quote, but it's something like this. He walks in, Logan, he goes, Jesus Christ, what's that fucking smell? It smells like the cheesemaker's got his dick in the brie. Cheesemaker's got his dick in the brie.
I should have made a list of my favourite lines, actually. There's just so many of... jaw-dropping lines, isn't there? You know, laugh out loud stuff.
And that scene shows how ruthless as well Logan can be. It's a brilliant scene because it really shows what a fucking bastard Logan can be. Because they find dead, like, badgers or something in the chimney. It's been pushed in the chimney. It's obviously been done deliberately because he hasn't paid the contractor enough money for the job.
That's right.
He's underpaid him. And this is what, and it is a great, this scene is a brilliant scene because it's a real true quotation, a real true idea of what these corporate fuckers do. They really sting the little man. They really fucking do this. And it's a great political point being made. These nasty billionaire fucking corporate bastards, they shit on the little man. So they'll get him to do a job and they'll deliberately underpay him because they can. They can get away with it. They can fucking get away with it. So as a consequence of top of that, he calls him over and he said, I'm sorry, Mr. Roy, you've not paid me enough money for this, sir. And he goes, well, you're going to get, it is what I'm going to give you now. I'm going to give you $100,000 for the whole job. That's what he says, doesn't he?
So he caves, does he? So he just caves into the builder?
No. What he does is he calls the builder over. These things come out and that's what's causing the smell. The kitchen staff, this is another thing as well. The kitchen staff have laid out all this incredible food, lobster thermidor, you name it, it's incredible buffet of really expensive food. Logan just turns to the catering staff and he goes, get rid of all that. Get rid of that. It's covered in the stink. It's covered in the stink. And then you see them tipping perfect fucking food, incredibly expensive, beautiful food in the bin. It just says it all. Then he calls the contractor in. And he just says, I'm only going to give you $100,000 for the whole job. No, it cost at least... The materials alone cost $200,000, Mr. Roy. He goes, you have fucking done that deliberately. You pushed them up there. Blah, 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 blah. He says, no, I didn't do it. It wasn't me, blah, blah, blah. You underpaid me, sir, anyway. I can't afford this. He goes, take me to fucking court. Fuck you. He knows he can do it. He knows he knows that he's got the financial power just to shit on anybody like that. And another telling one, very, very quickly, another telling scene that really stuck with me, the very, very, very first episode. It's Logan's 80th birthday, and then they all travel by helicopter, all these fucking helicopters, land in this field where it's set up with a baseball diamond, yeah? Mm. And then Roman encourages this little lad to come and join in the play.
Yeah, the gardener's son.
The gardener's son. That's right, the gardener's son. And he said, if you can hit a home run, I'll give you $1 million. I'll write you a check for $1 million. And in the end, it's fucking Wamsgans who fucking runs him out on the last bloody...
Is it?
It's Wamsgans that puts his foot on the thing and he runs out. And Roman goes, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh. And Roman rips the check up.
It's so cruel, that, isn't it? It shows what a cunt Roman is. But you know then, who sort of saves the day? Because you can tell Logan's not impressed.
It's Logan. And what he does is brilliant because he gives Wamsgans' present to the family.
Yeah, is it Colin? He gives it via Colin.
He gives Colin the watch.
He says, give him that.
Give him that.
I know that, and that shows Logan in a pretty decent light, yeah, doesn't it? I mean, probably because he didn't want the watch, but he realised what a twat Roman was.
Yeah, of course. It's a double-edged sword, though, isn't it? It's like, I don't want the watch, and it's probably worth a few bob, and that's embarrassing. Yeah, and it's funny, that element of giving...
Well, I remember he was asking Shiv, he said, what should I get your dad for his birthday, you know? Because it obviously is difficult, what do you buy a rich person? And I think Shiv says something, well, if you spend 10 to 15 grand, you'll be fine. He wastes that amount of money on this watch. I mean, why would you think Logan wants another watch anyway? I don't understand people have loads of watches.
Well, they don't have anything. They don't have any imagination. This is it as well. These people, all of them, they have no fucking imagination. They have no inclination to try and use their imagination to buy the old fella something interesting. He obviously loves war medals and stuff. They could go to an auction and get him something, some kind of war memorabilia. He'd probably love that. Mm-hmm. They don't think, do they? Oh, just buy him an expensive fucking watch, you know?
That was a sort of running theme maybe with Tom and his presents, because he bought Shiv that scorpion.
And they were just totally
really insulted. He thought it was a great present. She couldn't believe it. She deserved that, though, didn't she? She was a scorpion.
It's like you, it's a joke, though. It's a joke, it's a scorpion, like you. It's like fucking hell, Tom. Digging the hole even deeper.
But another favourite bit, Dave, talking about Tom. Oh, God, Dave, I laughed so much at this. And I just kept bringing it up to Michelle and mentioning it to other people who watch it. Is when they went to that sort of hedonistic nightclub. Someone's birthday? Tom ended up.
Fucking hell. It's like the stag night, isn't it? It's like the stag night before Tom's wedding.
Tom's stag night. They go to this sort of hidden
club. And they go through the train tunnel into the door at the side, into this fucking sleaze. And Sandy's there, the dirty fucking...
Yeah.
That's when we're told Sandy is the dirtiest, sleaziest fucker around. But hence why he gets syphilis.
And there was those two women that had that startup business that Kendall embarrassed himself.
That's hilarious.
We know when he bought this pair of shoes that cost a couple of grand or something.
So embarrassing.
But it's when Tom goes with that prostitute, or not prostitute, I think he's just
She ends up dating Roman straight after.
Oh, yeah. He goes with her, and then he's telling Greg about what he'd done. And
so funny, mate.
Basically, he's swallowed his own load.
She sucked me off, held it in her mouth. And then kissed it back to me and told me to swallow it.
It was so hard.
So,
Greg was like, you swallowed your own load? Suddenly it sows this seed of doubt, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because obviously Tom's like high as well. And then it sort of brings him back down to earth. And he's like, oh, so that wasn't a good thing then. And Kendall and I think Roman, they sort of take the piss a bit as well, don't they? But it was so Tom. I just thought...
Incredible. I mean,
Tom.
I'd love to just mention a couple of like the Greg the Egg and Tom moments as well. Mm. Like one, Tom's wedding, when Greg is really worried about Tom's really worried about Shiv and that slimy fucking ex-boyfriend of hers.
Yeah, Nate.
Nate, who's a... And again, it's subversive. It's playing with the character. So Nate works for the guy you think, you know, the people you should like, really. You should think Nate's a good guy. Because he works for a guy who is basically the equivalent of Bernie Sanders. He's like Bernie Sanders.
Played by Eric Bogosian.
Yeah, Yes, Bogdalion or whatever his name is, yeah. Mm. You don't see much anymore. But he played brilliantly, played Eavis, the presidential candidate.
Yeah, but he was corruptible, wasn't he? Because
he did
a deal with Logan in the end, I think.
Indeed. Yeah. But in a way, it's because he wants to get some... He wants to cool the jets from ATN to cool the jets on him. Oh, Fox Show. News. ATN are Fox News, basically, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're a fucking horrible, fucking nasty right-wing bunch of bastards. So, obviously, Greg sees this little bit of intimacy between Nate and Shiv. The night before their fucking wedding, you know, at the wedding, what's he fucking doing there? What's Eavis doing there with Nate anyway? He's crazy. But anyway, they're there. And he goes to find Tom. And there's Tom jogging in the morning in the snow, which is a bit kind of strange because it's all very snowy that morning, you know. So yeah. The idea is they must be getting married in the English winter, I'm assuming. And then Greg comes to find him. Hey, man, I got something to tell you. And Tom just doesn't want to hear because he knows what he's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say something about shit, man? Goes, no, I don't want to know. Fuck off. He doesn't want to know. And it's this brilliant moment where he's totally in denial. And in the end, he's fighting Greg to the floor. And Greg's desperate to be a good friend.
But Tom grows a pair with Nate, if you remember.
He does, yeah. And it's a beautiful moment.
It's a great scene, and he won't let him drink his wine, will he?
No, he won't pour it back.
He grabs his wine and starts pouring it back. You're not drinking my fucking wine.
He said, my dad paid a lot of money for that wine.
In the bottle, I mean.
Well, this is it, because he was saying, my mum bought that wine, and his mum and dad don't make loads of money, but they bought this really expensive wine for the wedding. Pour it back in. And then once he does, when Nate humiliates himself by pouring the wine back in, I love it where suddenly I think his Uptown Girl comes on and he starts dancing on the dance floor. It's great the way he does it. Does his little dance to himself. Yes, I win for once. I fucking win. And the other scene between Greg and Tom scene that I love so much is where Tom finds out that Greg has got documentation for the cruises. For the cruises fuck up. And Tom, his reaction is great. He's like, Greg, you fucking Machiavellian, fuck you. You're a fucking slimy bastard. You know, it's great that he does it. You know, it's so good. He kind of admires him. He does,
because he sees Greg as really naive and wet behind the ears.
Yeah, but not on that occasion. Very
clever and looking after number one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a brilliant moment because he's really sort of laughing his head off. Brilliant double act, those two together.
Yeah, they are. They really develops that. What do they call themselves? The Disgusting Brothers. And when they have that fight at the end.
That is brilliant. A few minutes, really, in the scheme of things in the series, before Tom becomes the big man.
Yeah.
And even at the end, when they've had this kind of almost a punch-up, he's kind of turned to Greg and said, you're still going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's a marvellous moment, really.
He'd obviously betrayed Mattson. Greg had betrayed Mattson. But Tom had enough pull with Mattson to be able to keep Greg on.
The way he
puts that purple sticker on, because if you remember earlier in the episode, they had these purple stickers at Logan's old house, and they were using them to say which items of furniture they wanted to buy.
Yeah.
And Tom just seems to have a set in his hand, and he puts one on Greg's forehead saying, I own you.
Yeah.
That was another beautiful bit. Really good.
Another scene, which, of course, I'm sure you'll agree with me, is a kind of... It's a Brian Cox tour de force, really, is Boar on the Floor. The Boar on the Floor scene is just amazing.
It's hard to watch that.
It's so hard to watch. But kind of when you watch it for the second time, again, you kind of... I mean, I've been loving the fact that we've gone back to the end and started watching it again. You kind of see it with fresh eyes. That's how good a series it is. Because we've been sat there watching it going, we've not been watching anything else. Watch it from the beginning again. It's wonderful because you see some of the nuance that perhaps you've missed. And it's so layered and so clever. And there's so much reading between the lines because you can view a scene and go, maybe they mean this or maybe they mean that. You know, you can have this ambiguity. There's some lovely ambiguity in there where there's just enough breathing space for you to make your own opinion on it. And there's so much that goes on through all the series like that. And there's so
you're right in saying it's layered. I've been looking at clips on YouTube and stuff, and people are highlighting all these like hidden things and hidden meanings and Easter eggs and this sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's obviously a huge labour of love for Jesse Armstrong and the writers.
Huge.
You know, they're putting everything into every episode.
Everything. The work, the performances, the direction. You know, Mark Mylod in particular has been brilliant, but most episodes have been beautifully directed. Fantastic locations. Tour de force acting. There's no... I mean, all the actors would be very
it's
humble.
Very hard to decide who's the best actor, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Who deserves the Emmys. I mean, I don't know how they've been shared out.
Well, then you get
these awards, but they should all have got one.
Absolutely. And then you get the last two series and you get this fantastic character of Madsen, played by the brilliant Alexander Skarsgård. I think he's a brilliant actor.
Yeah, I've not seen him in much, I don't think.
I watched him in, what's it called? Little horror film, something cool.
Is he Stellan Skarsgård?
He's Stellan Skarsgård.
Infinity Pool.
In fucking Infinity Pool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was very Logan, that
It day. Was, wasn't it? Infinity Pool, yeah. Mm. He is Stellan Skarsgård's son, yes. The brilliant Stellan Skarsgård. He's a great actor.
The other, was it Bill Skarsgård?
Bill Skarsgård played
Pennywise.
Pennywise. Yeah. So they're a real bloody successful acting family. The thing is, though, I've got to do this as well. Fucking hell, bear with me a sec. So he's in Infinity Pool, and he's very good in that. Very good in that, to be fair. It's a very odd little sort of David Cronenberg-esque. I think it's done by his son. It is Brandon Cronenberg is the director of Infinity Pool.
Oh, yeah.
Chance to see it. It's a good little horror film, to be fair. Falls away at the end a bit, really, you know. And is it called Big Little Eyes? Yeah, the drama series, he is fantastic. I would highly recommend that as a series if you haven't seen it. Listeners,
is that
if you
with Reese Witherspoon or something?
Yeah, it's really good. I started watching it with trepidation. I'll sit and watch it with Jackie. You know, I didn't think it was going to be my kind of thing, but I thought it was brilliantly done. Really, really good. And to be fair, the IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, and what have you, are very, very high. 8.5 out of 10, 89% Rotten Tomatoes. So it's not going to be Succession, but very, very high standard, and I enjoyed. And also, it's only two series. Hallelujah.
That's good. That's a bummer.
Only two fucking series. Not 15 series or forever.
No.
Two series. This is another thing about Succession that's so brilliant and typically British. Four series, that's it. Thank
I know,
you very
but
much.
Dave, I wish it just would carry on. I do. And I know it's right in so many ways to end it now, but...
Lee, this is what's going to happen. I'm pretty sure of it. Do you know what's going to happen?
There'll be a film.
Young Logan.
Oh, of course, yeah, but that won't be as good.
Of course it won't. It'll be... But American executives... We'll go, you know what we need to do? We need to get the story. We need to go back in time, see how Logan Roy became this fucking huge success. Comes out of Dundee, Scotland, England, Great Britain, and finds his way to Canada, where he's abused by his uncle, okay? And there, we'll get someone, let's get someone really big to play his uncle. Maybe George Clooney. Yeah, we'll pay some money for like someone really big, play his Canadian uncle, who beats the shit out of him. Be a good kind of character role for George. As a drunken fucking bastard. And Yuan is the blue-eyed boy. Treat him great. They treat Logan like shit. But Logan's going to one day become this fucking...
Who would play Logan, though, Dave? It'd have to be Ewan McGregor, wouldn't it?
Oh.
I know he's too... What are we talking about? He's too old. But who's a young Scottish actor?
Is that fucking guy from Line of Duty? What's his...
Yes.
Martin, Steve
Arnott. Oh, that's his character, isn't it? Steve Arnott. I don't know.
Steve Arnott. Yes. No, we'll call him that. Steve Arnott.
For the love of God.
I was wondering whether, if Succession had been made a few years earlier, whether they would have maybe gone for Albert Finney to play Logan. Because I think Brian Cox and Albert Finney were very close, weren't they? They were good friends. And I think he really admired Albert Finney and everything. And yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a shame in a way, but I mean, I'm not complaining because honestly, Brian Cox is he's a fucking amazing actor. Right?
What was he sort of doing before this? I mean, he crops up in the odd thing, doesn't he? I saw him in Morse the other day, but that was obviously the 80s.
He's
but
just one of the great character actors.
What was he in before Succession?
He had a nice small part in Zodiac.
Yeah.
He's in lots of films like that.
That was over 10 years ago, that.
Yeah, that's true.
2006, seven, I think.
Yeah.
Because originally in the writing, they made Logan Roy Canadian, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
And Jesse Armstrong changed it and kept it as a surprise for Brian Cox.
Yeah, they said, oh, we want you from Dundee. So, that's where I'm from. I'm from Dundee. The thing is,
oh, really? We didn't realise, yeah.
Martin Compton.
Was he from Dundee? Well, that's interesting. He's from Dundee.
How about this? How about Martin Compton as young Logan, right? And Adrian Dunbar as the uncle, the abusive uncle. Yeah, so the same guy's perfect. Line of Duty.
Yeah, perfect, Dave. But I'm going to have to get on to one of my other favourite bits, which was sort of led into there with Logan's roots. Now, was he from Dundee or was he from Edinburgh?
He's from Dundee.
Right, so why does he support Hibs then?
Oh, God knows. He's American.
But the best, my favourite scene of the lot is when Roman buys him the hearts.
Right, yeah.
You know, hey, Dad, I got a surprise. I bought you the hearts. What? hearts of Midlothian. Yeah. It's your team. I'm Hibs. No, Dad. No, I've heard you. He's talking about the hearts. You know, I'm sure, Dad. I'm sure you're wrong there. He goes, oh, yeah, how would I know who I've supported my whole fucking life? It's the best bit. I could not stop laughing at that for days.
Hey, Lee, what about L to the OG? Oh, Kendall's God. Rap is fucking...
Yes.
L to the OG.
Well, Kendall's into gangster rap, isn't he? Because that's his first scene. He's listening to some on his way to close the Volta deal or so, he thinks. Yes.
I think he's playing it. Is he not playing it with Frank in the car when they go to...
Well, there's some other driver who's up his arse going, yeah, you're the man. You're the man, Mr. Roy. But other absolutely amazing scene, it's another Roman scene, is when Roman oversees that rocket launch. Is it in Japan?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And he sort of brings it forward so it coincides with Schiff's
wedding.
So he's like, oh, fuck the safety checks. We don't need any safety checks. And he's watching it on his phone. It just explodes. And it's just his face. It's like, oh, shit. But then he just turns his phone off and pretends it didn't happen. But he's like slightly shitting himself because someone's killed. So killed, but it turns out that the only damage is someone lost an arm and a couple of thumbs.
He goes, only a couple of fingers, a couple of thumbs. I mean, really, mate, we should be doing, we've got to do another podcast on this because there's the Jerry and Roman kind of relationship, the bizarre relationship between those two. Connor and his girlfriend.
Yeah, we've not spoken much about him.
No, this is it. I mean, and again, Alan Ruck's performance as Connor is brilliant. You know, yeah. He is, whether you like him or hate him, it's such a great, it's such a comedy tour de force, really.
You don't really want him, you don't like him, you don't want him to redeem himself, but you are sort of screaming at him saying, find a shred of dignity.
Yeah.
You know, you're with this woman, this former hooker.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just constantly begging your dad for money. She doesn't love you.
In a way, he ends up the most kind of content. This is the thing. He marries Willa. Wow. They actually get married. On the day his dad dies, they carry on and get married. They seem kind of like, if not settled.
She doesn't love him, though.
No, she doesn't, but she tolerates him. She tolerates
him. She's there because he's rich. I mean, that is quite overt, isn't it? But, you know, he funds her crap plays.
Yeah, well, that's it. But you know what?
Though? I know it's a sort of, there's a sort of mutuality of convenience, isn't there?
It's also a general kind of fair bit of compassion.
I think she does grow to like him.
She grows to love. That's what I mean.
But she doesn't love him.
Irrespective of his balmy fucking political ideas and everything else, there's a kind of compassion there.
Well, it's sort of compassion stroke sympathy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
She can't. She'd feel so guilty if she just left him.
So I want to do something on you, Lee. So let's imagine we've got some top Trump cards. And here's some categories. So I'm going to throw it at you. So scores out of 10, 1 to 10, okay? Well, let's just do the Roy family for now. So we'll say Logan Roy, and your categories are arrogance, cunning, fuck-up, which means what kind of fuck-up are you, your level of fuckery, you know, sycophantic, humorous. I was going to say mind fuckery, but we'll leave that one out because we'll just leave fuck up. So, okay, Logan Roy, arrogance out of 10, Lee.
Well, I mean, arrogance is sort of, you'd call somebody arrogant who thinks they are better than they are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I suppose Logan is really, really good.
Yes.
So is it arrogance or is he just brilliant?
Well, that's it.
You know, that's why he acts arrogant. You could say he acts arrogance, but he's got good reason to be.
That's beautifully explained because there is, again, with top Trumps, you've got to be sort of very direct.
I put that as a 7, really.
7, okay, that's good. I like that because he's naturally confident he's right, but is that arrogance? Good point. Cunning.
Well, he's always one step ahead. I mean, he doesn't really need to be cunning, I don't think. He just knows what to do.
No.
He's a manipulator in a way with his kids sometimes when he's on the back foot. So he can be. But I don't think he's like always playing games.
No, I agree with you.
He's quite straightforward.
Yes.
He understands how much power he has. So I'd probably say a 7 there again. 7,
okay. When he does decide to play games, though, like ball on the floor, when he's trying to extradite the truth out of somebody or trying to find out who's a traitor in the room, he's a bullying, cunning bastard, really. Oh, yeah. But fuck up, what kind of fuck up is he?
I don't know, Dave, that's a good one, that. I don't think he's that fucked up. I mean, he wouldn't view himself as fucked up, would he?
Smacking Roman in the face? Well... Like, he does deserve it, but... And then in denial in the car afterwards. I didn't even know you were there, Roman. When he goes, shut the fuck up! To him, smacks him in the face.
I don't know, it's a difficult one, that, because I wouldn't automatically say he is a fuck-up. I think that he's had a hard life, but he's benefited from the hard life. It's taught him valuable lessons. It's probably left him horribly hard-faced and unloving.
Yes.
And unempathetic, but I don't think he's a fuck up in the way, you know, I'd say the other characters like Roman and Ken are.
Well, that's good. This is going to be fun.
So I'll probably say 5, Dave, if I'm honest.
5, that's good. I agree. I'm agreeing with all these so far. I'd probably end up agreeing with you, so it's pointless me doing it. Sycophantic. To what degree is Logan Roy sycophantic?
Probably 1. I think he be. When it comes to presidents.
Yes! Brilliantly said. He does. Hello, Mr. President. Yes.
Yeah, it's the one time. He's often got the upper hand in that situation, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he has.
But he says, I choose the president.
With Pierce, with Nan, he was a bit creepy a couple of times. Mm. And he was desperate for everybody to toe the line and not say this and not do that. Mm. That's interesting, yeah. Good one point. Humorous.
Well, he never really relaxes and has a laugh, does he?
But he comes out
with some quite funny lines. But
he comes out with some fucking corkers.
But I don't think his aim is to be funny.
No, not.
It's usually an insult.
It's usually an insult.
I don't think he's that into humour.
He isn't.
He isn't. So I'd say a 2.
Maybe I should have put one-liners rather than humorous, but we'll, okay, go with that. That's the one I would disagree with. I think intrinsically the things he says are funny. I would put.
Oh yeah, if you're saying that, you know.
I would say he's about 8.
He's got a great turn of phrase. And
I suppose when I say humorous, I mean in the context of the show.
Okay. Well, he is probably one of the least humorous.
You're right, he is.
Isn't it?
He's a miserable old cunt.
Probably Kendall is the least.
Yeah, he's a miserable old
really
cunt. Okay, we're gonna throw in mindfuckery because I think it is good. What degree of mindfuckery does he play on other people?
You know, this is the question. Is it deliberate? This is what I started off with when I was thinking of Logan. You know,
Paul on the floor, mate. Paul on the floor. Oh, he's a bugger.
He is.
He can be a right manipulative, nasty piece of shit. But does he do it deliberately?
Does he need to do it as well?
Ah, good question.
I think he does it to punish people. So that boy on the floor was like, I'm sick of you fucking dickheads. I can't believe you're working for me. I'm going to humiliate you with ball on the floor. You know, he did that out of frustration, I think. Because he was just so pissed off with everyone.
So true, it's brilliant.
Six, I think he must know, he must, well, maybe higher than six, because he must know the effect he has on his kids and how much he has fucked them up and continues to fuck them up.
Okay, so let's
six
go
or
now.
Seven.
Okay, let's go now, and we are going to Conor Roy, the eldest son from the first marriage. Arrogance, Conor Roy. The butter is frozen! The butter is frozen! You're all fired.
Yeah, I mean, he's extremely arrogant in the fact that he thinks he is a credible candidate for the president of the United States. That is the pinnacle of arrogance, isn't it?
I want to know what job.
There's other times when he's really not arrogant, because he doesn't seem to be cut from the same cloth as the others, does he?
No, it's not. It's
he
weird.
Hasn't got this. He only later becomes very, very ambitious. Because he's got nothing else to do. And maybe he does feel that he needs to compete with them at that point, but he's not interested in the business. He's just rich enough to be able to run for president. So I don't know if he really believes in himself that he can be president. I can't help thinking he does it to impress Willa or just for something to do, because he's got nothing else to do, has he?
He kind of did it off the back of Willa saying that he doesn't do anything.
Oh, really?
So I know what I want to do, Willa. I want to be president of the United States.
Well, there you go.
So, cunning.
Does he have any arrogance? I mean, he acts arrogant, you know, obviously running for president. But I think he's not the most confident person, is he?
No, he's not.
And he's always trying to keep the peace. He's never quite sure of his own position. No.
So
I'd probably put him as a six. I think he's very weak. I think he's a weak.
A six is good. Cunning.
Cunning.
Does he have any cunning?
Not really, I wouldn't say. I don't remember very many, if any, moments of manipulation from him.
Let's give him a zero then.
He's quite straightforward, isn't he?
Yes. What kind of fuck up is he?
Well, I suppose
10 on 10.
Because he's got a different mum. And he's been out of the business. I don't know if he is as fucked up as the others. I don't know if he craves his dad's love as much as the others.
No.
He sort of realised that it's toxic. Does he live somewhere in Canada at the beginning?
No, he's got a ranch like out in the desert, hasn't he? Yeah.
I'd say he realised quite early on that it's quite toxic being around the Roys.
Yeah,
he separated himself. I think he's a bit fucked up because he's never had any real status by the sound of it.
No,
he's always lived just off the money. He doesn't appear to have done anything of value or worth.
No, it's almost like there's a backstory there that we don't know about, which is maybe he was brought into the company and he was terrible, or maybe he never did. Because he just shied away from it, and his dad just accepted it.
And maybe his mum was a bigger influence on him than Logan.
Maybe. And I think Logan feels bad because he really treated his first wife very badly, I believe. There's always that hint to that, that she was struggled, and I think she had some mental health issues and stuff. Interesting. So he has, in a way, it could be argued he's the least fuck-up of all of them, really. Sycophantic.
Well, he's extremely sycophantic to his dad, constantly creeping to his dad for money.
But in a way, he kind of does it in a kind of blasé way. compared to, say, someone like Roman, we'll come back to, you know, and even Ken, you know, sometimes their sycophancy is so obvious. He kind of does it with a bit more panache, you know. But I agree with you. I personally would say sycophantic, six.
Yeah.
Humorous. Is he intentionally humorous? He's very laughable, but you kind of laugh at him rather than with him, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. He doesn't come out with killer lines.
No, he doesn't. No killer lines. Does he offer any mind fuckery, really? I don't know. No, is it?
Not really.
He's probably not.
He's pathetic.
Connor's not a great card to have in the
top. He doesn't get taken seriously by his siblings, does he?
No, he doesn't.
There's a few scenes where they go, oh, just fuck off, Con. We're talking about business. And yeah. No, they just dismiss him very easily. Yeah. Well, let me ask you one now, Dave. So why don't you do Kendall then? So
oh, God.
The first category is arrogance.
Oh, God.
Is Kendall arrogant?
Is Kendall arrogant? Yes, he is. Kendall can be very arrogant, very up his own arse, and then can show... Does he show humility, really, when you think about it? Yeah, maybe at times... But is he feeling sorry for himself? You know, even when he ends up, he doesn't kill the lad, really. I mean, the lad pulls the steering wheel across, doesn't he? And it's a terrible accident. But when the kid dies, does he really feel guilt about it? Or is he just feeling terribly sad for himself?
I think he's more sad and worried for himself, isn't he?
Yeah. I would say, yeah, and especially towards the end, really, it's me, it's got to be me, as the CEO, and... I've got to run the business.
I'm the oldest son. That's an amazing line, that, isn't it?
It's amazing. So
Steve just goes, you're not.
You're not. As a brother, I love you dearly, but I can't stand you. Cannot stand you.
I thought that was a bit harsh, that. I don't think it's that unlikable.
Yeah, very harsh. Kendall's character is such a tragedy because Jess leaves him as well, who... You know, he's been.
It's just so stressful, isn't it? Working.
It's so stressful. So his PA, who's been with him throughout the whole of the series, leaves him, and he's devastated about that. He's devastated she leaves, and then all of a sudden he thinks, yes, I've got them on my side. And I have to say, I meant to say before that it's a wonderful scene that when they're in Barbados with the mother, and they go there, and they're like kids again.
Yeah.
And they're all doing stuff together, and it's really lovely. But what a difference 24 hours makes, because when they go to do the vote, it's Shiv who puts the knife in on him. It's her vote that does it.
And again, you know, I'll go back to, I think Shiv is cleverer than the other two. She often makes the right choice, and I think she did in that. Because Kendall would be terrible.
Yeah, it's not just that, though.
The share price would nosedive under Kendall. He didn't have any credibility whatsoever.
Absolutely. And it's also ultimately Shakespearean because she's pregnant. She's having Tom's child. Mm-hmm. She knows what's going to happen is a very good chance with Tom as CEO and her married to Tom having the baby that is half a Logan. Half a Roy, not a Logan, apologies. You know, half a Roy.
That would be fucked up.
That would be really fucked up. Bit of daddy love there. Half
Chinatown.
Yeah, Chinatown, pure Chinatown. That it's the bloodline will continue, you know, through her.
I mean, we'll get on to the ending, I think, after this. I think we should probably.
Yeah, I'm digressing.
But yeah, so arrogance, what are you going to score from Kendall?
Kendall's arrogance is a high 8 for sure.
Yeah. It's inbuilt, isn't it? He's born with it because of who he is. Cunning.
I'd say that he thinks he is.
Yeah.
He thinks he is. But he's really not. He's not at all. You know, shocking, really. Even when I'm not even going to go into scenarios because we all know what Kendall's about. Mm. And he isn't very cunning, really. Thinks he is, once again. So I'm going to give him 3.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, though, isn't it? You think he's playing it right sometimes.
Yes.
And you think, actually, he does know what to do here. He's read the room here.
Yeah.
But then it just... balls around him, doesn't it?
Well, I was just going to quote that.
Just better than him. Nearly everyone he goes up against is better than him.
And then in a physical situation to be cunning, where he comes out of his car accident and wants to disassociate himself from that, He goes back to his hotel room. He changes his clothes. He does this, that, and the other. Blah, blah, blah. What the hell's happened? He's left his fucking key card.
Key card, yeah.
At the side of the fucking lake.
Is it Colin that found that?
Yes.
I think it was, wasn't it? Colin. Yeah, I love Colin.
Fucking Colin. His eyes are everywhere. So, yeah, fuck up. I'm not even going to discuss this. He's a 10.
Massive. Right?
Sycophantic. He can be horribly sycophantic to his dad, especially after the betrayal. So I'm going to give him a 6 for sycophancy. Humorous. I am going to give him a 4 because L to the OG. Hello. Yeah. Deserves a lot. Yeah. And mindfuckery. He thinks he's got mindfuckery, but usually other people have the mindfuckery on him.
Yes.
So he gets a 2. So poor Kendall, not very...
Right, so Roman.
Roman. Arrogance, straight away I'm going to say this, 10.
Yeah.
He's a fucking arrogant little prick. Out of all of them, he's the one I want to smack him right in the chops. He's a cunt. I'll move on to cunning, and I will say that he is one of the most cunning characters in the show. He has got cunning, but sometimes it backfires, and he's certainly not as smart as he thinks he is. You know, the dick pics and what have you. He's an idiot. So I'll give him 5 out of 10 for cunning.
Yeah.
Fuck up. He's a massive fuck up. He's a massive fuck up. And he's hinted that he's had problems in the past, lots of drinking problems and what have you. Da, 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 da. And let's be honest, he cannot hold any kind of relationship with a woman at all whatsoever.
No.
I suspect what they're alluding to there is that he's just immersed himself in pornography from a very young age. And has no idea how to be intimate with a woman. It's very odd.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and brilliant writing. Absolutely brilliant writing. So he's a massive fuck up. I would say he is 9.
Just be behind Kendall.
But just behind Kendall. I'm going to give him 9 for sycophancy as well, because he can be so grovelling towards Logan sometimes. So fucking grovelling. Really.
Well, it's interesting that you're scoring the high on sycophancy because of the groveling to Logan, but
yeah,
I wouldn't say he's... I mean, Kendall's a bit sycophantic to other people, isn't it? You know, he tries to... But I don't know. I think what I like about Roman is that he always stood up to the bullshit. He didn't respect people that expected respect.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. And he, that's the way, but with his dad...
Yeah.
Was yes, dad.
Well, I think he's... He was the one out of the 3 kids that seemed to need his dad's love more than...
Hugely.
He loved his dad maybe more.
He loved his dad more, and it showed at the funeral, didn't he? He couldn't handle the speech. He just lost it.
He couldn't totally handle it. He couldn't handle life without his dad. And couldn't he was the youngest, wasn't he? I think there was some storyline where it was alluded that he was bullied. Well, they locked him in the cage, but they said
Kendall
loved that.
Bullied him. And yeah, Kendall denied it.
Yeah.
There's some beautiful subtle moments as well, because when, maybe not subtle moments, but moments that suggest other things all the time, again, letting you read between the lines. When Logan hits Roman in the face and tells him to shut up, Kendall jumps into his defense straight away. It's the first time he's shown any kind of animosity towards his father, who has been very, very passive towards since the accident. Mm-hmm. And he goes, don't you hit him. Don't you touch him. And that alludes to childhood. He was very, very wicked, Logan, to Roman as a kid. That's what they're implying. And that perhaps Kendall, as the older sibling, stuck up for him. And certainly was trying to do that as he got older.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Roman accuses, is it Kendall and Connor? It might be just Kendall, of where they locked him in the dog cage and made him eat dog food.
Yeah.
That's how Roman remembers it. But they said, no, you loved it. And
you
it
loved
wasn't dog
it.
Food,
I
it
love
was chocolate
that.
Cake.
I just love all that, Lee.
Yeah.
Because that shows this different psyche going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. And that is great because, like you say, Kendall denies it. Connor said, oh, you know, you loved it. And Roman says, no, you abused me as a kid. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
So I'm going to humorous. Yes, he's incredibly humorous.
He has the best lines.
He has some of the best lines.
The best insults.
Huge. Massive.
He's very witty.
Very witty.
That's an understatement.
Very, very. And he plays it brilliantly. Again, Kieran Culkin, tour de force in it. in the series, without doubt. 10, mind fuckery. Again, when it, certainly with the sarcastic lines, he's a mind fucker.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give him quite high on that as well. Maybe give him 6.
Yeah, fair enough.
Shiv.
Right. Shiv,
Pinky.
Wow.
Pinky!
Isn't it interesting she's called Shiv? Do you think that's deliberate? Because a shiv is obviously a knife, and she ends up stabbing Kendall in the back at the end, which is, again, very Shakespeare.
Profound. I love it. So, arrogance. Yeah, she's very arrogant, I think. Very arrogant, I think.
Well, she's sort of quite... I quite admire her. I mean, she's a very strong character, isn't she?
Yeah.
I think that's why Mattson really respects her.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think she, in many ways, she is the...
respect her.
Yeah, I think in many ways she's the smartest of all the kids, for sure. She's the smartest. But she is very arrogant, and I would sort of say she's at least a 7 on the arrogance
list. Oh, yeah, I'd score her higher than that. I mean, she doesn't seem to have any self-doubt, does she?
No, she doesn't. Let's go up to 9 then. I think she's a 9. She's kind of like very self-assured that she's right, and she's always right. Cunning. Cunning's an interesting...
Well, very cunning. If you think about how she played Roman and Kendall towards the end.
Tom. She played Tom, her own husband. Tom. She's very much a kind of Lady Macbeth kind of character, really, in many ways. I would say, so let's give her an 8.
8 or 9, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I like that, Lee. Going for a 9. Shiv could be the strongest card in the pack, you know. 9.
I'm thinking that.
Do you know what, pal? You know what? Fuck up. What kind of fuck up is she? Is she a fuck up? Yeah, I suppose she is. She certainly was fucked up before she met Tom.
Tom
helped her.
He sort of rescued her, didn't he?
He rescued her.
So she doesn't appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think she's a big fuck-up, definitely.
She is a fuck-up.
Probably being the...
Fucked up, as well as a dad.
Yeah, the only girl in the family.
Yeah.
She was always overlooked, and she was never seriously considered, I don't think.
No.
For the... You know, it's a bit like in the old days... Girls were never considered to be heirs to the throne, were they? It was always the line of boys. And I think she's known from an early age that she's a second-class citizen in the eyes of Logan, you know, and she was never really going to be considered for the top job. Though Logan changed his mind on that because he realised that the other two were just so bad that she was the best bet.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I think she is. She is. I mean, the way she is with Tom, I mean, she just can't seem to accept love, can she?
No.
She's so fucked up.
That's her fuck up, I think, more than anything, is the way she does.
She could have it all.
Yes.
But she sabotages it because
she sabotages.
Maybe she doesn't love herself. Maybe that's part of it.
Hugely. That's a big part. And it's a big part of it with all of them. But I think it's nicely played by Shiv. It's a subtler performance. And that score, you know, but that is the crux of all of it, really. None of them really have got very high self-esteem or love themselves at all. And maybe self-esteem should have been one of the categories, but they'd have all been getting a 10 or a minus 10.
Well, that's it. That's the thing, isn't it? They think they're great, but deep down they know they're not.
Yeah, I think this is it. They'd be minus 10. Sycophantic. Is she sycophantic at all, really?
She can turn on the charm when she's trying to jockey for a position. So
yeah.
I wouldn't say she's genuinely sycophantic.
No, I think she finds it really hard. She, out of all of them, find it hardest to be sycophantic. And she just couldn't play that role that Logan wanted her to play when they were trying to take over Pierce. And she joked and took the piss out of the guy having done 2 PhDs or whatever it was.
That's right. That was a good bit.
What's the point of that, for fuck's sake?
Just look it up on Wikipedia.
just look it up on Wikipedia. I mean, it's fantastic. And that's where she just blurts out that she's going to become the CEO, which was like ridiculous. Why are you doing that?
What time is that? Yeah. She's not sycophantic at all.
No, she's not. I would actually say maybe even as 1.
0.
0, yeah. Humorous. Is Shiv funny?
Well, one line I remember recently, which was really funny, was when she described Tom as 1 pepper on the menu. She just froze him under the bus in front of Mattson. I think she is very funny. She was very funny when she was making quips about, was it Kerry, that young PA that ended up in a relationship with Logan?
Yeah.
She was really cutting when it came to her.
I think she's very direct as well, like Logan. out of all of them, she is the most like Logan. Mm-hmm. She's kind of very direct. But the thing that Logan doesn't like is sometimes, as an operator, she spouts off just at the wrong time.
You're right.
That's why he backs out, because
she got too
jobby. There is an element of chauvinism, I think, in amongst that. I think, or ideally, he did want to have a male successor. So I think Shiv had to be perfect for him.
Yeah.
For her to take over, even though she was the closest, really. But when Madsen takes over, he just feels she's too much of a loose cannon and too ambitious to do it his way. You know, he doesn't want
someone strong. No. He wants a puppet.
He doesn't want the big ego to propel it in a certain way. He wants to be in charge. So, mind fuckery. Is she I would say, if you went out with Shiv, I'd say she's a real mind fucker.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
I mean, she
plagues so many people.
Yeah. Oh, she's dead right. And no, not more so than her own husband. I mean, she really...
Poor Tom. What's that like? I love you, but I don't really love you.
That's funny. Poor man. What the fuck? But then again, he went along with it for the money, let's be honest.
Yeah, I think you're right. Shiv is the best card in the pack.
She's the best card in the pack. Obviously. Oh,
apart from the sycophancy bit. But yes. Talking of sycophancy, I mean, obviously, if you
expect Greg the Egg would be the
Tom. Is Tom more sycophantic than Greg?
Oh, well, that's a brilliant question.
Greg, he becomes the most pathetic sycophant in the end, doesn't he? Where he's just trying to get in conversations with Mattson and his team. And like, who's he? Who's this guy?
Yeah. Well, let's do a very quick Tom and Greg. Let's do very quickly. Yeah. Tom, arrogance.
Oh, I don't know. He knows what he can do. He knows he's confident.
He can be, but selectively arrogant, isn't he?
Yeah.
Selectively arrogant. Very much so with Greg.
Yeah, when he's with Greg, this is it. It depends who he's with. He knows his place in the pecking order.
Yeah.
And he will defer to most of the Roys and not really challenge them.
No, he won't. It's fairly low then. Should we give him a 4?
Yeah.
What about cunning?
He played it well.
He did.
If you're reading it that way.
I'm giving him a solid 7. He got to
the top job. I think he's always thinking of his own position, isn't it? He's always thinking of, where's my angle on this?
Yeah,
that's where he's positioning himself. So I think he's constantly thinking like that.
Yeah, great.
He's constantly thinking, what's this mean for me?
Totally. So quite high, I think. Eight. Easy 8. Fuck up. What degree of fuck up is Tom? Or is he a fuck up?
Well, I don't know if he was a fuck up before he met Shiv. Probably not. Who couldn't be fucked up by Shiv?
Exactly.
I don't think he's had a fucked up life.
No, I think he's held it together quite well, considering.
Yeah.
So I'd say about 5.
Yeah, I was thinking that. 5 or 6.
No, here's an interesting one. Sycophantic.
Oh, well. I mean, he is the most sycophantic, isn't he, really? He acts sycophantic, whether he's actually really sycophantic. I'm not entirely sure, because it's about...
It's about playing the game, isn't it?
Playing the game, knowing your place.
And, you know, what he doesn't like, he doesn't mind being sycophantic, but he despaired being humiliated. And the ball on the floor, you could see...
Poor Tom.
It was very sad for him. I would say, though, we've got to give him a lucky number 7 for sycophantic. Yes. He certainly was lucky for Tom. Humorous. Ah, now. Oh. Yes. Tom.
Well, he is the comedy character, isn't he?
He's not brilliant.
It's not so much deliberate.
No, but when he is deliberate, it's amazing.
He can be very, very funny.
Hence the MySpace of STDs. I mean, that is... he comes up with some fucking, you know.
Yeah, there's so many more I know he said, but I can't think of.
And when Greg goes, I like going to Cannelloni's place, whatever it is, some Italian joke. It's delicious. And he goes, no, it's not. It's not. Oh, God. So he can be cruelly humorous as well, I think. Mm, you know.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? I'm going to give him an 8 because he does make me laugh.
Yeah, definitely.
And mind fuckery. I think he's quite pretty good at it. with Nate, with Greg, certainly, with Shiv. I mean, he gave as good as he got with Shiv.
Well, I was going to say one of the best moments, which I didn't mention, was that row him and Shiv had.
That's incredible. In the night when he couldn't get to sleep. Yeah. Great scene built around the whole idea of him. All he wanted to do was go to bed and get some sleep. And he couldn't get people to leave. And as a consequence, it all came out. And he was so angry and upset.
That's it. You like the bits where Tom is himself and he's more real. You know, he's constantly on as this corporate guy, isn't he? Trying to get where he needs to be. But when he's actually genuine and he stands up for himself, I love it.
Completely agree. Yeah. Completely agree. When he switches off that, when and those moments of vulnerability, and in particular those moments when he really speaks his mind, like you say, he draws back the curtain. He's fantastic.
There's some great bits with Logan where I think Logan wants him to be more himself, but he ends up being bewildered by Tom talking in this corporate frantic bullshit. He's trying to get info from Tom or find out what he actually thinks, because it appears that he does value his opinion. But Tom is just thinking, well, what should I say here? What will go down the best with Logan? You know, rather than just telling what he thinks, he just can't do it. And Logan just ends up walking away, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck it.
I forgot that.
He just looks so confused.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's fantastic. There's so many scenes. There's so many scenes when they're having, when they're brought to book over the through ships. That's so
cool. Well, let's not forget one of Tom's greatest moments was when he alerted Logan to what the kids were up to.
Oh, yeah.
And Logan, that line he says when they come in and they think they've won.
Yeah.
He's already negotiated his, what does he do? He negotiates his divorce settlement with Caroline. So he's got more votes than them, or it's a tie or something, so they can't win. So again, it's a great moment where you realise, you don't mess with Logan, he's always going to win.
He always finds a way.
And he says, you busted here, guns in hand. Now you find out they've turned into fucking sausages.
Brilliant line.
I fucking win.
Fantastic. Mm. Oh, my God. What a show. Incredible.
Yeah. Greg, I think if we're going to do Greg.
Yeah, so arrogance for Greg.
Well, he becomes extremely cocky and arrogant, doesn't he? But I think there's still an underlying, there's a lot of unconfidence with him. Really, especially when he's with the big boys, he can't really operate in that world at that level.
It's not a natural disposition for Greg, is it?
He's
quite a nice kid, really. He starts off like a really nice person.
He does.
You know, because he just gains all these terrible habits as time goes on. I'm going to give him a one. No, he needs to be high because he does get
four.
Four or five.
Four's good. But he does really become very arrogant in the end.
He does in the end.
He hits Tom back.
Yeah, he does. And he also, when he starts shouting about, he starts shouting at members of staff and stuff when he gets some power.
Yes.
So it seeps into him, doesn't it? But he isn't naturally arrogant, I don't think. Cunning. Well, see,
he's another one always thinking of his position, always trying to curry favour with everyone.
Absolutely.
He has this relationship with Ken.
Ken as well. Where
he's sort of Ken's skivvy a bit.
Yeah.
But he's doing it, you know, to
Ken's dealer for a bit.
Yeah. That's right, he is, yeah. He never has that relationship with Roman or Shiv, does he? They just think he's crap and pathetic.
Yeah.
So he can never do anything to impress them.
No, but he's nailed on to what he needs to do. He's like, I'm with Tom and then with Ken.
He's not particularly competent in his cunningness, is he?
No, he's not. But
I'd probably give him a six.
But he was pretty wise with the keeping back some of the documentation.
Good point.
Let alone, for that alone, he deserves a six.
Yeah.
Fuck up. What degree of fuck up is...
Well, again, you know, the more he gets into it, the more fucked up he becomes.
Yeah. But he kind of starts off a total fuck up because he starts puking up in the costume at the park.
Yeah, he's a bit of a loser.
He's a bit of a loser. So he's a bit of a fuck up in that respect.
Mm.
Smokes a joint, throws up in the bloody costume, within the costume. But he's not in himself, and he's used as a person, that much of a fuck up. If you compare him against
I could see Greg as being someone that walks away from it all. He gets to the point where he realises this isn't healthy for him.
Yes.
And he wants to do something else. And he's going to try and suck up to Uncle Ewan.
Yes.
Try and get reinstated in his will.
Well, he still has some of Uncle Ewan's, you know, he's grown up with Uncle Ewan, isn't he?
Is it Uncle Ewan? Or
no,
is that
his granddad. Is
it his granddad, yeah.
Uncle Ewan's his grandfather. Yeah. So he knows Ewan will say things like ATN and the devil, you know, that they propagandise horrible right-wing news. And when he comes to work with Tom at ATN, he says, I'm kind of uncomfortable being here, you know.
Mm.
This is like working for the Nazis, you know. This is like dealing with the devil. I feel a little bit uncomfortable. I don't know if I should be here. So he's got a bit of a conscience. You know, he does feel things. Sycophantic. How sycophantic would you say?
Oh, he's hugely sycophantic. he may even be a 10.
He's a magnificent creep.
That's his game, isn't it?
some of the language he uses when he's being creepy is so funny. Because he's like that
with everyone.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Yes, madam, can I get you anything? How lovely to see you again and all this kind of stuff. It's almost childish. It's childish sycophancy, you know.
Mm.
It's brilliant. Humour. Oh, my God. I mean,
deliberate faces. He pulls the best scared faces, doesn't he?
Fucking great.
When Tom's going off on one, when Tom starts smashing up the room, I think he's celebrating something. I can't remember what it is, but they're locked in the.
When they get called in this office
with no windows.
When they get called into the panic room, don't they? Because a member of staff, it transpires, a member of staff kills themselves. Because they can't stand working for Royco any longer. So they blow their own fucking brains out. They all end up in a panic room. And Tom, of course, pushes aside some female members of staff to get ahead of everybody else. To hide away in the panic room.
Yeah.
And then when Greg talks about wanting to leave, working with him, I think, there on the ATN, he goes fucking apeshit. So I was chucking stuff at him. Just chucking the water bottles on
him. He make him do coke with him.
Yes. Can make him do. Oh, God.
No, I don't want it. No, you're having some.
You're having some.
It's like
he gets abused.
To make him equally as culpable.
Absolutely.
You know, if I'm going down for this, you are as well. He's a twat, Tom.
He's so manipulated, isn't he? But he is incredibly funny. In general, so for that, I personally, I'm going to give him a 9. Mind fuckery? Does he do any mind fuckery on anybody?
He tries, but no one takes it seriously enough, do they?
Maybe a 3.
Yeah, yeah.
Go on.
We've done 2 hours, Dave. Now
we haven't done this.
We haven't even talked about the ending.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
I think that sort of deserves another episode.
Let's do another episode.
I think we can get onto that.
Do you know what, mate? I think there's so much to Succession. It definitely deserves 2 episodes, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've loved it tonight, mate.
So have I.
It's been amazing. So, yeah, can't wait to do the ending.
Right, listeners, thank you for bearing with us. I hope you are fans too. If you've not seen Succession, then you need to watch it. It is incredible.
Yeah, and can I just say, listeners, in the words of Logan Ryan, I'll say it one more time, fuck off!
On that bombshell, good night.
My dad has been the one who's been there to meet me at my lowest moments.
Hey, Dad. Sorry to interrupt, but do you remember Edward?
Just want to say congrats on a lifetime of kicking ass.
Thanks. I'm not dead yet.
Also, I got you a present. We actually got you a present. We bought the hearts.
Logan, happy anniversary.
Hearts?
I remember my first day working with you.
Hearts Football Club?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Why? Because it's the Hearts. It's your team.
I'm Hibs.
You're Hibs? Oh. Really? Huh. Are you sure? I thought you were Hearts. I'm pretty sure, Dad.
You know, maybe you're right. You've always been my superhero.
How would I know what team I supported all my fucking life? I mean, maybe I support Kilmarnock or fuck old Chester Rangers. I mean, how can I fucking possibly fucking know?
Yeah, if it's any consolation, I'm horrible at gift buying. Yeah, always get the wrong thing.